We're going to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 287 and 5013. All right.
287 and 5013?
Yes. Public hearing. And then we'll go into the discussion. We'll get it for him. Mr. Broner. Mr. Broner.
Hello, Mr. Director. Hello, Ralph. Go, Ralph. First or Ralph.
Save a little time.
Thank you. Your name, sir. I apologize to the committee. I'm not testifying on the bill. That's why.
Fine, you're right.
It is?
Yes, you're going to apologize to us.
Go ahead, Ralph. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ralph Broner. I represent American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. That's 20,000 local, mostly state employees in Oregon. I have local government employees, but also some state employees. I'm here today to speak in behalf of both the Building Code Division budget as well as to integrate into my testimony support for Senate Bill 287. I would like you to know that John and Gervais, my dear friend and myself, worked door-to-door yesterday on Senate Bill 287, and basically we worked conservatives, and we now are up over 26 yes votes on 27 on the floor of the House since we were directed to do that. I thought I'd be right up front, and we have not completed our work as of this date. Let me say something about 287 in the budget that may be a bit different that I did with Rep. Backlund, and I don't want to assume you all really know this history of 287, so let me tell you how that began. We had a situation in the building. I first should start by saying that AFSCME represents 90-some percent of all cities in terms of building codes, and similarly the same with counties. But we also represent the states. So I don't have a conflict if you want to get into an argument between the states, cities, or counties in the sense that we represent them all. I look at you and I look at your counties and your cities who are on the committee, and we rep each and every one of them. Let me say that what has occurred in building codes is that the state represents approximately 10% of the state's population, 90% of the state's geography. And what had occurred in state building codes with our highly technical inspectors was that we were losing them either to the trades or to the private sector or to the city sector. I'll never forget a specific. The top pay range for my members at the state DCD as compared to the lowest pay range in the local cities and counties was lower in salary. So what happened is I asked DCDS to look at this, including DAS at the time, called on all the business folks, building trades folks for help. The emergency board was briefed. The emergency board realized that we were losing our top staff when, in fact, these were the folks who do the inspections and plan review for the most part for Eastern Oregon, is who we're talking about. And at that time, they put together a group that went to work. This was several years ago, through the process. And by the time they were completed, you see finally in front of you Senate Bill 287, so that we do not lose our talented people to other jurisdictions or to the private sector. That's really what this bill is about from this point of view. And this is in behalf of the rural Eastern Oregon, because they have opted for the most part to allow the state to conduct their investigations. I have also said to legislators when I'm lobbying on 287, so that I'm right up front with everybody, there are differences between what the cities want, what the counties want, and what the state wants. What I don't want to see any longer are those differences filtering into Senate Bill 287. That the fact is, we had a meeting on 587. We'll forget that. It's a separate measure, but it's related yesterday for hours. And I can tell you that what will work best is that we all work together cooperatively during the interim to meet these differences as to what the role of the state is, what the role of the cities, and what the role of the counties, rather than have negative backbiting. And that bothers me. And I like to deal right up front with people so that you know exactly where we're at in terms of our members, who basically are all three levels. So we support the bill, the budget. There was a lot of work that went into this. The Building Codes Division understand we not only had Senate Bill 35 4 years ago, some of you are new since then, which gave the state the overview authority so that we could get in and take a look at these cities and counties to make sure that we're providing the kind of service that protects whom? To my point of view, it's the consumer. That's really my top priority. And it was when I served here on this issue, when we started building codes in 73 session. So we passed Senate Bill 35. I think there are some flaws. I think there are some holes. I do think DCD needs to have overview authority over private sector inspectors throughout this state. Somebody needs to, because certainly if you work for a government agency, a local city, a county, or the state, you have overview over you. So the budget is absolutely needed to keep our folks. It's supported by industry and the building codes folks that are here. And on behalf of AFSCME, we respectfully request your yes vote and thank you for this opportunity.
Any questions? I had one question. You said that you thought that there were some mistakes and some pluses and minuses about Senate Bill 35. In your view, what is it about that is not working out well?
From what thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. From my point of view, listening to all levels, we need to make sure the resources and the clearly defined authority lies either with the State Building Code Division to say you're either going to have the one big thing that's bothering, two things are bothering folks. One is full service. Do you all know what? I don't want to assume you all know full service.
No.
Some cities provide partial services or partial inspection. Let's take five types, electrical, mechanical, structural, et cetera. And they currently will provide three or four of those, but not the remainder. So BCD, the Building Code Division, picks up the remainder. That has made some of the trade folks, I don't want to speak for them, upset because they feel that was cherry picking or taking the things that were profitable and leaving to the state, which you're the board really of, with those things that weren't. Whether that's true or not, these are the feelings that are out there. Under Senate Bill 35, we gave that, so the full service is something that many folks, including John I've heard talk about this, believe that we ought to have. If you're going to provide inspections, then you ought to provide full services to your constituents in that city, that county, and whatever, and make sure that works. Under Senate Bill 35, I believe we probably I would have had it tougher, but we had to get a bill through. I would have made sure that the state had the authority to say, one, you're going to provide full service or you're not doing it. Okay? Two, I would have said that you have the authority and the resources to make sure that the growing third-party or private sector inspectors and plans reviewers have oversight. Either you're going to require the cities and counties have oversight, or you, the state, are going to require oversight because of the complaints in the state police investigation going on right now. And I don't want to get into that because that's currently under investigation about an Eastern Oregon private sector. But you're going to have these things. You need an agency that has the oversight, ability, and authority. My suggestion was it should be the state that should, and because they are the authority since 1973 over cities and counties and always have been anyway. So those are the kinds of things I've thought about. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Bob Shiprack, Oregon Building Trades Council. I'll be very brief this morning. I'm also representing the building trades in support of Bill 287 and the budget for the Building Codes Department. One of the things as tradespeople, we really have to have a uniform interpretation of the code. Therefore, we need a strong state Building Codes Department, so that as we're working in various parts of the state or various parts of the county due to the balkanization of local governments that have now taken over certain inspections, it's really important for us to do our work and for our employers to understand what's required going from these various jurisdictions that the state have oversight and uniform interpretation of codes and a strong presence in Oregon in interpreting these. The other thing I want to bring to the, well, I should elaborate on this. I used to do a lot of residential wiring and what we call short order or service work. And literally, as you go from, you know, in the morning, you get your jobs at the office, and then you go to the map and you'd see which jurisdiction your job was in, because you had to have, in some cases, different materials. You had to know who the inspectors were, because they're all different. They had little different quirks and different ways of interpreting the code. So a lot of times your value wasn't based on how good of an electrician you were, but how well you knew the inspectors in the various jurisdictions. So we needed that uniform interpretation. The other thing I want to bring to the committee's attention is in 287 and in the budget. Ralph hit on it, but as a member of this committee, we need to be aware of what the department and a lot of the functions are. People talk about the two Oregons, the rural and the urban. Well, let's be upfront. Because of the way the system has been set up, the state, as Ralph says, has the vast majority of the land mass to inspect, with less than 10% of the revenues or people at business activity, construction activity in the state. It is critical for these people to have good inspections, as well as it is for somebody in an urban area, and that's why I think we need to understand that. These people, without the state, would have no inspections of their facilities, and so it's still a responsibility in this regard that actual state employees do go out and do inspections in rural parts of the state. The other thing that we're sensitive about, and you would be too, is, we've already heard it, is the size of the increase in 287. There are disagreements in this building as to how to go about raising fees. In this instance, the department has waited a couple decades to raise the fees, and now in order to get them where they need to be, it's a pretty sizable increase. I probably would have went around a different route and subsequently raised them as needed, so you didn't have this big increase. The bottom line is it's needed, or 12 positions will be lost that are vitally needed by the state, vitally needed. And I'll stop there and see if I can help with any questions.
Any questions?
Madam Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to appear before this committee. I'm going to have some general comments and talk about some budgets and other bills. But my name is John Javier, representing the National Electrical Contractors Association, the Sheet Metal Contractors, the Construction Industry Committee, and the International Union of Elevator Constructors, who all very strongly support the budget, the fee bill, and Senate Bill 287. We also support House Bill 2975, which hopefully will be before this committee, and also impacts and reduces the consumer payment into the system. I would like to say that in the last 5 years, the Building Codes Division, as far as we are concerned as an industry, has greatly improved in terms of its organization and its operation throughout the state. As was mentioned, under the law passed 1973, the cities had the first right to inspection, the counties the second, and the state picked up whatever is left over. That basically the state jurisdiction is 50% of the land mass, 11% of the population, and 2% of the permits, dollars value, I should say. It creates a great deal of difficulty for us. It was mentioned Senate Bill 35. We, a couple of sessions ago, worked with the legislature, and the legislature was in agreement with a policy of oversight. And we feel that that was absolutely critical to having an effective code that is going to be, hopefully, interpreted in a uniform manner throughout the state. Without the oversight, without the audits, we had local communities running amok, and we had disastrous programs. We had programs, quite honestly, that I couldn't recommend a contractor go check out a permit, because it was fraud on their side and it'd be a fake situation. And you've seen articles in the paper about in one county in Oregon about drive-by inspections that's being litigated at this point. There are all kinds of situations on this side. Senate Bill 287 provides for some of those jobs. Quite honestly, if we didn't have the oversight, I don't think local contractors would be interested in participating in the permit process. We'd probably rather repeal the law, because we'd have such a mess out there. We are coming to you with House Bill 2975. In the last interim, the Electrical and Elevator Board was faced with raising permit fees by 26.8%. And in doing that, at the request of the department to keep it from running out of money by the end of the fiscal year, they were not happy about doing that. They didn't want to raise it for consumers. And, of course, that is in terms of the state's jurisdiction where that those permit fees are. Plus, every time the state raises fees, cities and counties tend to follow, and we get an increase whether it seems justifiable or not. We asked the department if in that discussion on raising the fees for electrical inspection, if we could come back to them, if we went to legislation and were successful in passing House Bill 2975, for instance, and 287, if we could come back to the legislature after getting those, if we're successful, if they would roll back the increase in permit fees to the consumers, and that was agreed to on the Electrical and Elevator Board, then increased them. House Bill 2975, that hopefully will be before your subcommittee, raises the license fees for electricians for the first time since 1985, and it changes it from $100 for a three-year license to $150 for a three-year license. It raises the contractor license fee also, although there aren't nearly as many contractors. And that in itself creates a $500,000 fund that will come in. We think we, the industry, ought to be stepping up to the plate and paying for part of the cost of the department also, and thus House Bill 2975. And part of the surcharge increase in 287 is what we're paying. We had a situation the other day, if we didn't have oversight, I want to talk to you about one situation. I could give you 500 of them. But in Western Washington County, a project had been basically completed. It was advertised for a grand opening. It was a big facility. The contractor called for electrical inspection on Thursday. The owner of the building called up very mad on Friday morning and said, "What the heck's going on? You're going to stop us. They won't allow us to occupy the building until you get the inspection completed." The contractor went from Finville up to Hillsborough and found out that the problem was that the local jurisdiction had not been able to reach agreement with the developer on the price for water that they were going to be paying or utilizing in that development. So they refused to allow electrical inspection as a hammer. I call it blackmail. It's illegal. It's immoral. And they refused to allow inspection, electrical inspection, until the developer agreed to the price for the water for the project. And we see way too many of those things with jurisdictions and the differences. Thus, the audit program that's so important to us. Fortunately, the state stepped in. We have a right to go to the chief electrical inspector. As the contractor told me, the inspector said, "Who in the world called?" They had five electrical inspectors out there on Friday afternoon, and the project opened up on its grand opening on Saturday, as had been advertised on television and radio and what have you. We have a great deal of problems, not that we're perfect either, and it takes this kind of system to keep us all working in the same direction and hopefully in the best interest of the consumer of the state. And again, the Building Codes Division, Joe Brewer, Debbie, Mike, more recently, have done an excellent job, have been great to work with. We don't always get everything we want, and we probably shouldn't always get everything we want, but we do get a good system that's getting better, and these tools will allow it to improve even further. I'd be happy to answer any friendly questions. Otherwise,
Madam Chair, we forgot on behalf of the three of us, we had talked about this. We would all like to thank Representative Wilson, who allowed 287 to come out to this committee. We're not schmoozing. We truly thank you, okay, on behalf of all of us.
And
Madam Chair, the others?
And being my representative from Grants Pass, he's somewhat divinely inspired. But being a caveman that I am, we also have Senate Bill 512 that will be before you, and we feel that's a very, very important new policy and going to make a great deal of difference in the future of construction in this state.
Any other questions for?
I don't think there were any questions.
Oh, you're right.
We ask our own.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Jane
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I believe that Bill Cross will be back in the room shortly. I'm Jane Cummins with the League of Oregon Cities, and I appreciate the opportunity to comment. I do want to make a few comments and then make several comments on some of the statements that have been made here this morning already. First, I want to say that the League of Oregon Cities supports funding the Building Codes Division adequately. Our members want the division funded adequately so that the services that they feel they have not been getting to adequately allow these programs to operate could that they do have enough funds to make sure that everything does occur. Where we have, where we are questioning or trying to sort through what is the services and the funding at DCD is this. Senate Bill 35 did change the way that the Building Codes Division really operates. You've heard that the system was set up, the current system was set up in the early 70s, whereby Oregon has a statewide code. Local jurisdictions are given the ability to assume building code programs, and where they do not, the state does. So the state really, they adopt the code. In some areas, they actually have the inspection services. And under 35, their oversight responsibility was expanded tremendously. Well, that means that they're doing all sorts of things, and what we're trying to do is to sort out, you know, where is the division going? I mean, how do they see themselves? They have described themselves as the provider of last resort. That is that they will only provide the inspection services where cities and counties do not. If that is the case, then we believe that if we're going to have cities and counties in the business, then we need to make sure that they have the ability to perform the services. And when we hear about full service, the problem with that is that cities and counties are actually asked to perform the services with one hand tied behind their back. There is no way that we can get to what is called full service, which means that you offer structural, mechanical, plumbing, and electrical. Now, we have been working with various parties over at least the last three sessions that I've been involved on trying to create some flexibility without sacrificing and safety, but to recognize that we have a state that is growing rapidly, and there are a number of problems with having adequate personnel to perform in these programs. It's a matter of just not enough numbers. It's a matter of let's look at some of our certification rules, which are unique, and we all understand that it's important for Oregon to have those strong certification requirements, but we also feel that we need to have some means of having adequate numbers of personnel. We also have a rule that was passed as part of 35, which is called the Economic Impairment Rule, which says that if a city or a county desires to expand their program or assume a program, that the county or the state, depending on who has the current program, can say, but you're going to hurt the program that I already have, and we're going to say that it hurts us economically to the point where we wouldn't be able to function properly. So you sometimes can't expand. And we think if there's going to be discussion of saying to local jurisdictions you need to offer something that is full service, we first need to look at ways that we're going to allow that to happen. Otherwise, you're imposing something that is not a problem because there are barriers in the way. let me get back to the general services at BCD. Again, the functions have changed. And if there is a transition, you know, we want to be sure that the division is funded properly. Interpretations are critical. You've heard about that this morning. We think that they are critical. And we have heard from our members and we have heard from building officials that that is a very weak area in the division. And what we want to be sure of is that these types of services are adequately funded, and that there is a real focus on those sorts of things. What we want is a focus on those areas that are going to allow for strong programs at the local level. If you continue to have services that are not available, if you continue, you know, to tie hands behind the back of local jurisdictions, you're going to continue, you know, to see where we would even admit that there are things that we just can't do. So I mentioned the partial and the full service and the interpretations. We have heard that, and I think you get the idea that this can be rather a contentious arena. You just had mention of an incident that took place apparently in Hillsborough. We've heard briefly about a situation where a local jurisdiction blackmailed a developer. We were not given any specifics, and I certainly would hope that you would allow us to find out exactly what did happen in that. I'm sure the city of Hillsborough would like to know itself, and I would be glad to get back to you on that, because we've heard that, and you heard that, that there are too many of these instances. And
I think
Jane, I'm just trying to connect what it is you're saying with the bill, and I'm having a hard time. I don't know if I'm the only one here. It is. I've actually
287 is a bill which asks for a fee increase for some of BCD's programs and asks for an increase in the surcharge, in one piece of the surcharge for administrative services. The fees are important for them to be able to perform those services. We have in the past, we have asked the question, if BCD is the provider of last resort, and if we are to incent local jurisdictions or the private sector to assume these programs in areas where the state has them, then we should be looking at ways, actually, that there, in fact, there are incentives. And we mentioned on the Senate side that by continuing to keep BCD's fees low and subsidized by the rest of the state, and mind you, other jurisdictions are having to raise their fees, that there's not an incentive for the private sector or local jurisdictions to take over or assume those programs.
So you're actually
that's
supporting,
one
the, supporting the fees?
We're supporting, we're neutral. What we're doing is saying we think it's time to look at how we are funding BCD and what their functions are, and if indeed they are the provider of last resort, then we need to look at ways where we can strengthen the ability of local jurisdictions in the private sector to take programs and to create incentives for them to do so. The second piece, Representative Leonard, would be this, that if there is a 2% increase in the surcharge for administrative services, we want to be sure that the services that are being provided are actually going to strengthen the programs in this state. And quite frankly, we have not been able to see a good accounting of where the services, what the services are that are being funded that indeed are going to do that, make that strengthening happen. So we, and we would like to see if you have a surcharge and you have a lot of funding from BCD coming from the surcharges, and statute says that 2% is for inspection services, 2% is for administrative services, and 1% is for training, that those dollars are going into those areas, and if they are not, and we believe all of them are not, then why are they not, and how can we get to the point where if we specify dollars for certain areas, that they can go into those arenas. Administrative services is very important. They would help, that those dollars help for services such as interpretation. And yet, my understanding is that some of those dollars will actually go into reducing electrical fees, and we don't see the connection of surcharge dollars for administrative services for inspection fees. Again, it...
Just so I'm clear, part of the fees that local governments pay go to the state?
Yes.
And so your objection has something to do
we are asking, or we're looking at those, the dollars that come in from the surcharges to go to the areas where we think that they should go, and we're interested in making sure that the services are there to provide for strong local programs.
Okay, just again to support Representative Leonard's need for clarification, it sounded to me from your testimony that one of your highest priorities in terms of service was this quality interpretation of the code in order to support consistent code enforcement across the state, so that when one of the local inspectors calls the state, they in fact get quality interpretation. Is that, was I correct in understanding that? That's a high priority for you?
Representative Ross, yes, it is. We have a statewide code. We have a code that is very complex. It has changed. It has had many components such as ADA and seismic and other sections added to it over recent years, and it is critical that we have those services.
So if you are going to have an increase in your surcharge, you really want to be assured that you will have also an increase in the quality of the response on the interpretation of the code.
And Chair Representative Ross, yes.
And you are unhappy about the suspicion that some of these dollars may be siphoned off for other purposes and not going for services to the cities that are paying the surcharge.
Madam Chair, Representative Voss, the short answer is yes. Part of the answer, though, has to be that we don't know and we haven't had a good discussion of where all the dollars are going. So it may be that part of this can be cleared up if we have accounting.
So the additional thing you would want is accountability about where the surcharge is going, so that as we pass this bill, which increases these fees, the cities understand where their dollars are actually going, and there is agreement between the legislators and the administration of the department about where the dollars are going. Would just wanted to follow up. Would you explain a little bit more? You talked about creating flexibility without sacrificing safety, and it's my understanding that that would have to do with the state certification and cross-training, allowing one inspector to do more than one function so that they could be a full-service provider. Tell me about that, because I don't understand that piece very well.
Okay, Madam Chair and Representative Ross, on this question, perhaps Bill Cross would be also agreeable to add any comments. I can give some general comments, and then I think he can give any more detail. If I hear the biggest complaint or the biggest issue that I hear from city managers is that we have a lot of growth in Oregon, and we're trying to cope with planning issues and construction issues, and in the arena that concerns their building departments, they are unable to get adequate personnel. And they have often said, you know, we have not even been able to ask for folks or advertise out of state because of the restrictions in Oregon. And we have worked for several sessions to create some flexibility to meet that need. Now, there are folks who do not want to jeopardize safety, and we are amongst those. But we do feel that given that we've gone to a national code, and other states have gone to national code, and there are other certification processes elsewhere that seem to be working well and not jeopardizing safety, that Oregon could look at what is happening in other states and see if we can pick up some good ideas. We have, as I said, we have tried to work in this arena, but it has been frustrating. As an example, last session there was a discussion of trying to create some flexibility for plumbing inspectors, and we worked in the interim with folks because we were told that there was a proposal coming and there would be a hearing, and we were agreeable to that. And yet when the proposal came out for hearing, it went in the opposite direction, and what it made it impossible for even existing plumbing inspectors if those new rules have been put in place. And so, quite frankly, we are puzzled how we're going to get there. We need to be able to work together to create some more flexibility.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Coney?
Now, you've raised a number of issues that that are your concerns. Is there going to be a process if we approve this bill and the budget and move things forward, as I think we're likely to do, is there a process for a continued discussion of those items that are your concerns?
Madam Chair, Senator Troll, we certainly hope so. We have been in discussions with the Building Codes Division and the DCDS Director to open up some greater dialogue with local governments so that we can lay out what the issues are, what we see as the ways that we need to address some of these issues and work together on them. And I think we're headed in the right direction as far as that goes.
Mr. Cross?
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Bill Cross. I'm here speaking on behalf of the Oregon Building Officials Association. We, I think, have expressed in an earlier hearing our concern about the surcharges, not the fee increase, but the surcharge, and not the increase for statewide services, but the continuation of a surcharge for field services out in parts of rural Oregon. We are still concerned about that issue. We are concerned about ensuring that the services that are provided to our customers, as well as to us as program administrators from DCD in terms of code interpretation, code development, certification, support, that we get the maximum level of service we can. And there has been frustration in recent years about the relationship between local jurisdictions and the Building Codes Division. We look at them to be the leader. They're the state. And if a jurisdiction assumes a program, we need their help and support. And I think in part because a few years ago they financially had their hands tied behind their backs in terms of being able to compete pay-wise with other jurisdictions, and some of their employees were hired by other jurisdictions, that they had some difficulties maintaining the kind of expertise that a lot of building officials look for them to provide. That level of service has not met the expectations of a lot of building officials. They're frustrated. We're not objecting to the additional 2% surcharge for the Building Codes Division to provide services. We would like to see, obviously, those services as beneficial as possible. We would like to see a strategy wherein they would address the field services, because we don't think long term, or what's remaining left out there being unserved by local jurisdictions, it's a small portion of the population that it would make sense to extricate the state from that. But we realize that takes some time. I'm aware that later today or later this morning you will hear from the division, and they have indicated a willingness to this interim review, along with all the stakeholders' participation, and hopefully all the stakeholders would participate in looking at all the programs, state-supported programs, local jurisdiction role in providing services, licensing boards, I mean, trying to evaluate what's going on and how we can improve it, both internally at the local level, and if it takes some statutory changes, at least recommendations that would come back next session. We're willing to support that effort and would like to participate, obviously, in that effort. That may help us get over some of the difficulties we're experiencing now. This is a really poor relationship, and we can fault a lot of different people, including building officials. We're willing to try and make it better, whatever the legislative committee can do, and trying to encourage Building Codes Division to participate, you know, to support that process. I think they're willing to do so.
Any questions? Okay. Representative Ralph?
If I'm understanding you correctly, you are concerned about code interpretation, code development, and certification. Those are the areas in which you want improved service. And you are not objecting to the administrative surcharge, but you are objecting to the surcharge that subsidizes other services. Did I understand you correctly on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, that's correct. However, we understand that we just can't eliminate the surcharge today for field services. Somebody's got to serve those homeowners and building owners, and obviously there isn't a strategy in place. I guess what our hope would be is that maybe in the interim, through this other process, that you know, options might be identified that would help address that how we're funding and how we're providing those services. Because I can tell you that there are a lot of building officials who 98% of the state's building activity is being performed through local jurisdictions, and 2% of this building permit activity is going into subsidized 2% of the building activity, and that's, they're not comfortable with that. But I think, I guess, Representative Ross, we recognize it takes some time. Our commitment would be, or our hope would be, that we could develop some strategies, that BCD could develop some strategies on how to best facilitate a transition, if that's in the best interest of those owners.
Do the building officials believe that in the certification process there could be more flexibility without sacrificing safety?
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, yes, they do. I mean, they believe that there are ways of qualifying individuals that go beyond strictly evaluating them on the length of their experience, work experience, that there are other means of qualifying their ability to be, you know, an effective inspector through practical evaluations. So we think there are opportunities to be a little bit more flexible.
Do you believe that flexibility, again, done in a way that would not sacrifice safety, do you think that flexibility would help more jurisdictions be able to provide and take responsibility for full service?
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, to some degree it would help. The area that we would have the most difficulty, though, would be when you talk about full service, you're talking about A-level commercial office, schools, electrical, and plumbing. Mm-hmm. And that's an area where statutorily there's not a lot of room for flexibility.
But for
family, a lot of other programs, yes, the increased flexibility would help provide better service.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bill, could you give us a quick rundown on the breakdown of fees collected on the local level that are kept local and the proportion of the fees that are sent to the state? Give us a rundown on that.
Actually, Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, actually the surcharge is an additional assessment on the local building permit fees. So it's actually the customers of local jurisdictions who are required to pay an additional 5%, and 2% of that goes to support statewide services from the Building Codes Division, 2% to support their field services, direct services in the rural areas, principally the rural areas, and then 1% for education and training.
What was the first 2% again?
To help support statewide services such as code adoption, code interpretation, all the statewide functions.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, let me just clarify that fee, the surcharge. With the proposal to raise that with the considered legislation, would the surcharge remain at 5% or would it go to 7%?
Madam Chair, Representative Ruck, the surcharge would go to 7, and the 2% that I just mentioned for statewide services would go to 4%.
Okay.
And if I might add, now Bill Cross, on behalf of the Building Owners and Managers Association, BOMA, one of BOMA's concerns with Senate Bill 512, a bill that this
we
don't have, but that's been discussed, is that would add another 1.5% for tri-county areas, which here tri-county areas are supporting the rural programs for 2% and now asked to put in another 1.5% for their own local situation. And at some point, you reach a threshold of, the fairness or the fairness issue. And that's just something I think that's coming to a head that somewhere in the next few years, and perhaps through the sort of process that we've talked about, might be something that could be addressed.
Representative Lynn?
Bill, you represent the people that are the subject of inspections, and you represent the people that are responsible for the inspections.
Madam Chair, Representative Leonard, yes, I represent a certain segment of the people that are subject to inspections, commercial building owners.
And you said the current total fee is 7?
Madam Chair, Representative Leonard, it's currently 5%, but
you raised 7.4 raising the bill. Where's the 1% at? I see the current language that is 2 to defray administrative costs and the 2 to defray inspection costs. Where's the other one? Am I missing?
Madam Chair, Representative Leonard, there's another section of the law that has the 1%.
It's not in this bill.
Not in this bill, right.
What does that 1% go for again?
Manager, Representative Leonard, that goes to support education and training. Originally in 1973 when it was adopted, it was focused on providing inspectors, plan review, individuals of that nature with training. And over the years, it's included also contractors, home builders, architects, people that have to work with the code to help provide code awareness and what exactly the code requires.
So does Portland, for an example, fall under the provisions of this 5%? Do they pay the 5% as well?
Madam Chair, Representative Leonard, yes, they
do. So all municipalities?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Representative Wolfson, Representative Leonard. Thank you. I'm trying to get a global picture of this. All the cities and counties that issue permits are required to have the 7% surcharge, correct? It's just that.
Madam Chair, Representative Warner, that would be correct.
And am I correct that 2% remains with the county and the cities, or does the total 7% go to the building codes?
Madam Chair, Representative Warner, it all goes to the...
It all goes. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
John Miner and Fred Van Etta. Did I miss you on the list here? Okay. Bye.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Don Miner. I'm here on behalf of Oregon Manufactured Housing Association to speak in support of this measure. Our members are the largest producers of manufactured homes west of Texas. We build about 11,000 houses in the state each year, worth about $650 million. We export about 40% of those to other states.
Yes.
Sending to another state as an export. Our members deal with every state in the country, and we think that Oregon runs the best manufactured housing program in the United States. We hold it up as a model for other city or other states to pattern their programs after. This program provides us a quality control in the factory. They inspect every aspect of our houses, the structural, the mechanical, the electrical, the plumbing. They help us with our quality control in the plants. They keep a database. They can tell us in every factory what mistakes we're making, what actions have been taken to remedy those mistakes. They provide us training for folks who install manufactured homes in the field. They monitor their activities. They train local government officials to inspect those installations. They provide a dispute resolution process so a consumer anywhere in the state of Oregon can call Building Codes Division, complain about their house, and Building Codes Division will send an inspector to that consumer's residence, inspect the house, and resolve the dispute, all at no cost to the consumer. They're providing a program right now where they're monitoring the installations in the state of Oregon of manufactured homes. Their goal is to look at 8%. They go out, they get under the house, they get on the house, they get in the house, they look at every aspect of the installation of that house. They put all that information into a database that's available to our industry. It's somewhat proprietary, but each manufacturer can know what mistakes are being made on his house, either by himself or those that are installing the home. The installers can know what mistakes they're making. Local government officials can know what mistakes they're making. But this isn't just a gotcha program. They also then will provide on-site training for the local officials and the installers. They provide this service for $40 per section. A triple-section house costs $120. We think these folks are fantastically efficient. Now, their activities are overseen by an advisory board that's made up of consumers, government, and industry. And so we like to think that we have a hand in making them better, but it's a very, very good agency. I always hate to support the increases, but I'm convinced this one's needed. By the way, that fee increase initially will be paid by us, ultimately by consumers. The surcharge isn't paid by local government. They're simply the collector, and they pass it on. It's money that's paid by the industry and consumers. We believe that they need that to provide the oversight in the field. We do have concerns. We think that many local governments are providing a very, very good service, and we're convinced that others aren't providing a good service, and we believe the state of Oregon needs to oversee that program. We have a large financial interest in making sure that these homes are properly installed and that they're being done installed to the code. It's my understanding that there are now 100 cities that have building code programs. And kind of the way we see it working is that there was a time when the state did most of the inspections, and they had very efficient inspections in larger urban areas, and they made money on those, and they lost money in rural areas. My understanding is that now 100 cities have adopted the program. Increasingly, you know, the profitable, the efficient inspections are being picked off. There was a local official or a contractor for a local government over on the Senate side who suggested rather than adopting the programs on a city basis, that local governments be able to adopt a program on a zip code basis. We think that really makes the cherry picking efficient. That didn't go forward. We strongly oppose that. But it shouldn't come as a surprise to them that for the state to provide these rural services, they need some subsidies to do it. It's one Oregon. We think folks in rural areas should get the same quality of services as urban folks. We're not opposed to subsidizing rural inspections with urban inspections. And that concludes my remarks.
Any questions?
What is your fee going up? You say it's $40 per section now. What will a new fee be?
Madam Chair, Representative Roth, I believe that fee has already gone up.
That is the new fee that's already been established. And what is the installation? What is the fee that local jurisdictions charge for inspecting the installation?
Madam Chair, Representative Roth, I believe it's in the 300 range. They vary.
Thank you.
It's about 150, I think.
Representative, who absorbs the accounting costs for the collection and disbursement? For the surcharge?
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, at the local level, I assume that the payers of building permits absorb those.
So the county just adds the addition?
I assume they do.
Okay. Move it to Fred.
I am Fred Vanatta, appearing before you on behalf of the Oregon Building Industry Association.
We are supporters of the fee increase in Senate Bill 287 and of the rest of the budget. It is probably appropriate for me to make one or two additional comments. We have not always been supportive of this agency's fee increases over the years. We have frequently been here opposing them. Mr. Miner made this point, but I would emphasize it again. Unless I missed something in the 26 years since we set this program up, in part to Representative Leonard's question, I asked about what the city pays in the way of fees. The city doesn't pay any fees that it doesn't collect from the building permit applicant. They merely pass the money through. I do not believe there are any city general fund monies that go to the state in this program in any way. I do not now remember whether the initial surcharge was 1% or 2% in 1973 when we did this bill. There were two concerns that we had when we set the program up. One is about two-thirds of the geography in Oregon had no building inspection at all, and we needed to have some process to help make that go. That was one issue. The other issue, building inspectors were mostly fee collectors. There were, in a lot of jurisdictions, the building inspectors were simply fee collectors. And we wanted building officials to have some training and some qualifications. So we supported the surcharge to accomplish those tasks. There have been many proposals over the years to increase that surcharge. Now, after 26 years, it's crept up to 7%. We have policed that carefully over the years and opposed most suggestions to increase it. We support it this time, and we encourage your affirmative action on it. I am sympathetic to the confusion that you may have from the testimony from my good friends Bill Cross and Jane Cummings. They have a very difficult assignment from their clients. And to maybe give my interpretation of what you may have heard, and I recognize that's dangerous, and I mean no ill will to them, but some of the committee may be confused about the messages that they've gotten here this morning. Some local jurisdictions do not like the state supervision. And if there is some way to make sure the state doesn't have enough money to go in and do the inspections and the audits and provide the close supervision that the construction industry wants to have happen, that would be the wish of some of the jurisdictions. And so some of the testimony that you've heard kind of tries to deal with that issue. Now, there is also a potential concern that the state will develop a sufficient cadre of inspection services that it will make it more difficult for the local jurisdiction to pick up the service if they think it's a profitable service. The thing that the perspective that, frankly, I bring to this that I hope none of the rest of you ever have to go through is a time when we built almost no houses in Oregon. We went from 1978 to 1982. We had a 70% reduction in residential construction in this state. And the local jurisdictions everywhere looked at their you can't staff down fast enough to accommodate a 70% reduction in your income, and the local jurisdictions face serious financial problems with their building programs. and nobody was around saying, gee, we want to take all these things. They were frankly trying to figure out how to shed something that was costing them that was a negative drain on their cash flow, and I don't blame them for that in the slightest. But the point is, that could happen again someday, although we hope it doesn't. Makes this program very volatile. I have said enough. We encourage your affirmative action on the measures.
Any questions?
Well, I would just say that was much more helpful than the clarification I was trying to get.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, Mr. Wright.
Members of the committee, Jerry Wright, Local 290, Plumbers and Pipefitters, and we're here in support of 287. And I'll make it pretty short. Fred explained pretty much what I was going to try and explain there. That so here we've got private sector folks supporting a fee increase and government types. Kind of what's wrong with this picture a little bit. It all goes back to exactly that same thing. We're looking for the oversight. We want good quality inspections. We want good quality programs. We feel we need to have the oversight and the audit process to accomplish that, and Fred explained that very well, so I'll stop with that one. Back to looking for, we touched a little bit on not being able to find quality inspectors or not being able to find enough plumbing, electrical, structural, mechanical inspectors. Thinking about the 93 or 95 session, some of the building officials came to the plumbing and electrical industry and said, why don't you guys, you do training, you do apprenticeship programs, why don't you help us out and get some inspectors put together for us? So we did that. We have about 3,000 licensed plumbers in the state and probably 6,000 licensed electricians. So we got together and we put together a little pool of guys that could do A-level plumbing, electrical, mechanical, and structural. Not to take away from local governments, but to be able to meet their peaks. If they had somebody that was sick or on vacation or they got overloaded, that they could pick up the phone and dial a number and get some help for a week, a month, a day, whatever they needed. And you know what? The phone never rang once. So I'm a little bit, after we spent quite a little bit of time and energy and effort in trying to put together a program to relieve the problem that they perceive they have, and then nothing ever happens with it, I sometimes think they're being cried wolf just one too many times on not being able to find good qualified and certified people. A lot of it all goes back to money again. And, you know, the building boom that we've had in this state has taken a lot of the building departments and put them in the yachts instead of the rowboats. And like Fred said, we hope we don't ever have to go back to the 70s and early 80s, because in all of us in the construction industry that were there at that time remember that very well, and it was not a great time. That's all I have.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you very much, sir.
Okay. Do we want to have Mike meet your talk?
Yeah, we're going to stick in the
discussion.
Was. Next close public hearing on House Bill 287, an open work session on House Bill 287, and PCB the same. Okay, we're close public hearing on 5013 and open the work session on 5013. Mr. Brewer and Ms. Lincoln.
I'll produce.
Okay.
Here's my mic.
Okay.
You're going to lose, right?
Go.
Lose your quorum. I think it's 9:30.
Okay. If we can keep our, we've got to work this in about 5 minutes. So we can keep your comments very brief. Mr. Brewer?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe Brewer. I'm the administrator of the Building Codes Division. Really can't add a whole lot to the testimony that you've heard. All I can say is that the division's working hard to do its best. The proposal that's before you with Senate Bill 287 and House Bill 5013 is a current service level budget. We're proposing to simply maintain the level of service that we're currently providing, and the division would request your support in that effort.
Any questions? Okay. First, I just wanted to clarify on the record. We had a conversation with Mr. Greenfield and folks in the hall, and
Mr. Greenfield has made a commitment to set up a work group to look at the entire building code structure during the interim. So I will be reporting back next session on what that work group does. My recommendation on Senate Bill 287 is that the subcommittee moves the bill to full with a due pass recommendation. The fiscal impact is incorporated into the building codes division budget, and without this, they would be required to reduce their program below the current service level by 12.7 FTE and $1.8 million.
I'm sure.
Yes,
I move the LFO recommendation.
Senator Terrell moves the LFO recommendation on Senate Bill 287. Discussion?
I'll be a no vote on this budget. I think we're throwing money at a problem that exists. We have checkers checking checkers. This is an extra layer of government. This particular budget has gone up dramatically over the past 10 years. I am very happy that some of the customers are satisfied and very pleased with what they're doing with the manufactured housing. I am not satisfied with the service that they provide to cities. I think they are correct in their assertion that the quality of the service given by some cities varies strongly from what is served by, given by other cities, but I'll be a no vote.
Any other discussion? Any objections? Mr. Representative Black. Senate Bill 387?
If I could make a brief statement on the record as we discussed.
Okay, thank you.
While Oregon has been well served by the building code strategy it currently employs, it also is true that for decades there have been contention about the roles and functions of individuals, organizations with responsibility for delivering building code services in Oregon. Disagreements about the Senate Bill 35 program reviews, bills that are before the legislature this session and the division's budget reflect a clear need to examine what is going on and to rethink how each element, state, local, public, private business, and labor will work together to ensure safe and durable structures in Oregon. It is the intent of the director and the agency to convene responsible individuals and organizations to examine each component of the system with a review to clarifying and solving problems and improving the service. It is our intent to accomplish this review without additional funding by asking each participant to bring resources and a willingness to work on specific issues through an interim process. The director will ask for a report which enumerates problems and solutions, opportunities, and the means of taking advantage of them. The specific mechanisms for implementation, administrative initiatives, or proposed law changes for the 2001 session. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Thank you for Senate Bill 287 passes to the full committee with due pass recommendation. And with Representative Cross's
question. Are you carrying that?
Pardon me? Carrying it. Thank you. Yes, carry it. I'll carry it to the full. And then, Representative Warner, would you like to carry it on the floor?
Sure.
Okay, or no, we need to go back to the no, it's been through the Senate.
It's been through the Senate.
Okay,
we're done.
Yeah. All right.
I
would recommend that the subcommittee move the bill to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Again, the fiscal impact is assumed in the building codes budget. Any discussion? Motion? Mm-hmm. Okay. Senator Troll moves. Senator Troll moves move House Bill 5013, full committee with due pass recommendation. Representative Ross objects. Any other objections? Seeing none, House Bill 5013 passes.
In carrier.
Okay. Senator Leonard?
Sure.
And also just to meet the
Senator Troll?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And,
hey, that was it. I wondered if you wanted, just since we're all here, take the time and deal with the budget notes on or OSHA. You need to open the
I'm sorry.
in the work session on 312?
Representative Minnis and members of the committee, we had had a couple of three budget notes in front of us having to do with OROSHA. With the co-chair's recommendations, we made minor changes to the first budget note that make the apprenticeship program more general and more applicable to a variety of other program areas. And I have run that past Senator Gordley and Representative Leonard with no objections. There was no change to budget note number two, which instructed OROSHA to increase its farm labor camp inspections. And budget note number three, which was the ergonomic discussion that occurred in front of you, has been deleted according to an agreement between OROSHA and the employers group. The department has agreed to establish a work group to explore ergonomic issues and did not implement any new ergonomic standards unless required to do so by federal law, pending the outcome of that work group. OROSHA will report to the emergency board on the activities of the work group and any proposed legislation. OROSHA will continue to enforce existing regulations. My recommendation to the subcommittee is that they approve budget notes one and two.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Senator Charles moves. We pass budget notes one and two. Discussion?
I would just say that I'm really pleased with the budget note number one, and I'm very much looking forward to working with Pete in the interim. We just talked about this yesterday on developing this program. Having experienced, as some of us here did, visiting a farm labor camp, it's really it is exciting to think that we could actually go out and reach out into those camps. Potentially, according to this budget note, and find individuals that live there that would be qualified to be trained to be instructors. And I think it could actually do more than anything else we could do to help turn around the conditions there. So I really appreciate this budget note and look forward to working on it.
Further discussion? Any objections? Motion carries. Okay. And we are adjourned. We have another work session.